मस्तु मामिद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासदि गौरभक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे।
Okay, so mantra 11. Yeah. To achieve the goal of life, one should be acquainted with both nescience and transcendental knowledge. So that's the point that's being made here. This is like your thesis. It is not possible to overcome nature by material endeavors. Even great materialists like Hiranyakashipu and Ravana were not able to avoid death. What then can be accomplished by the tiny Hiranyakashipus and Ravanas of today, whose plans are thwarted from moment to moment? The great demons of the past tried to overcome the material nature. Most of the modern people happily conform to her cruel laws. Quote, the path of avidya, or advancement of material knowledge for sense gratification, is the path of repeated birth and death. As he exists spiritually, the living entity has no birth or death. Birth and death apply to the outward covering of the spirit soul, the body. Death is compared to the taking off, and birth to the putting on of outer garments. Foolish human beings who are grossly absorbed in the culture of avidya, nescience, do not mind this cruel process. Enamored with the beauty of illusory energy, they undergo the same miseries repeatedly and do not learn any lessons from the laws of nature. Ishupanishad Mantra 11 purport. So in other words, it's not a popular concept, but there is no material solutions to material problems. It just isn't. Because material nature is very great, so our solution is that they all go away. There is no material problem, right? That would be what we considered, you know, appropriate, proper. But doesn't matter if it didn't go away for Hiranyakashipu and Ravana, it's not going to go away for any of us, right? There's no bigger demon than these two, right? Like that. You know, even, you know, Dantavakra and Shishupal, they were big demons, but, you know, compared to Hiranyakashipu, like that. I mean, see, he would catch the planets and tie them up and put them on the stairs leading up to his seat for sitting in court. So he'd walk on the backs of all the planets, right? Yeah, that's Hiranyakashipu. Now, the modes of nature basically come to us through these planets. So he's got them in control. Still, it doesn't go the way he wants it, right? So the point is there's only spiritual solutions, right? Because even if we follow all the piety of the Vedic culture and everything, still there's birth, death, old age, and disease. Because if you want to go to the heavenly planets, having done all your auspicious, you know, rituals here, you still have to die. You still have to go through death. Right? Very few in the self-same form are just taken like that to heaven. Some are. But it also can mean that they're leaving the body here and they're taking them in a suitable form to the heavenly planets. But because it's the same soul and they're able to understand that continuity, right? Because heaven's not going to mean anything if you don't understand where it came from, right? You're going to be inspired to be pious if you saw, I did all this austerity, and now I'm going to the heavenly planets from that austerity, right? If it's like here, is that I don't remember what's last life, then I don't know how I got what I got. So I'm not inspired to necessarily do good. Does that make sense? Right. So the idea is that, therefore, there is no material solution. The only solution is Krishna consciousness, God consciousness. By God consciousness, then you perform all the appropriate activities. And by doing that, then one frees oneself from the clutches of material nature. That's a solution. Right? There's no solution in material nature. The solution is to get out of material nature, right? Just like you can be in the toilet and set up house in the toilet, right? But it's going to smell. You can try different things, this, that, and so many things, but there's going to be times when it still smells. You know, it's just the way it is. So the best thing is set up house somewhere else, right? Not in the toilet. So it's just the... Does that make some sense? Yeah. Okay, so continue. Instead of trying to overcome the Lord's divine energy or conforming to it, the human being should be used the tribulations in the material world as an impetus to go back home, back to Godhead. Srila comments in this purport. Like he's saying, in other words, one is overcome by them, by material energy, and one, loses one's inspiration. So that's one alter. The other is that, you know, one's very real stoic and that, yeah, it's just the way it is, you know, what can you do? Either way, both are useless. Because one action stops, because without action you can't accomplish anything. You lose your inspiration, there'll be no action. The other one is a performing action, but the action they're performing, even though they don't mind all the difficulties, it's still not going to solve their problems. It's not going to get them out of the material world. So therefore, either of those is not good. So just because one is able to put up with the tribulations, that's not enough. You're putting up with the tribulations to go back to Godhead. That's the point. So Srila Prabhupada comments in his purport, the miseries of this material world serve to indirectly remind us of our incompatibility with dead matter. Intelligent living entities generally take note of these reminders and engage themselves in the culture of vidya, or transcendental knowledge. Human life is the best opportunity for the culture of spiritual knowledge, and a human being who does not take advantage of this opportunity is called Naradhama, the lowest of human beings. Everyone is struggling hard for existence, but the laws of material nature are so hard and fast that they do not allow anyone to surpass them. In order to obtain a permanent life, one must be prepared to go back to Godhead. Because we're trying to make a permanent solution here, but there isn't one. So that has to be made for the spiritual world. Right? There's not another alternative. Here is also another point. Is who does not take advantage of this opportunity is called a Naradhama, right? Because that's what we were trying to discuss before. How to define a Naradhama means the opportunity is there to practice Krishna consciousness. They won't. That's a Naradhama, right? Mudha doesn't know. He's just very, comfortable to go on in his miserable, material existence and just think that's normal. Just like an animal. What do you call it? Maya Pratigyana means he has all kinds of vast knowledge, but none of it leads in the way of Krishna consciousness. So he's also not thinking of Krishna consciousness. And the Asura is, just out to fulfill his plans, and he's a good organizer, so he can work very nicely towards that. So this Naradhama means he has the opportunity to perform service, doesn't take it. Right, like that. The process by which one goes back to Godhead is described in the Vedic literatures and is revealed by the spiritual master. In order to successfully follow this process, one should restrict the material sense enjoyment as far as possible. The unrestricted sense enjoyment in the diseased material condition is the path of ignorance and death. Restrict material sense enjoyment. So unrestricted, then, is the cause of rebirth in the material world. So here, that doesn't mean the senses aren't engaged, right? Unrestricted means one is just engaging the senses for sense enjoyment. That's its purpose. Restricted sense enjoyment doesn't mean that there's any... means. This is probably a major misunderstanding. Restricted sense enjoyment does not mean that the senses are in any way less contacting the sense objects. Restricted sense enjoyment means the method or environments in which they contact the sense objects. Does that make sense? A devotee restricts his senses, right, the tongue, and only eats pshat, right? So does that mean he eats less than the karmis? Much of the time we see he eats more. like that. Some of these brahmacharis, like what they can put away, it's like, you know, I don't think the karmis would faint, you know, like that. You know. I've heard stories of, you know, these brahmacharis in traveling Samputan, and there was one very skinny Russian brahmachari. He could put away literally almost a bucket of pasta. And this other guy, he was really big. I think he was from Siberia. And he could eat, you know, he could do himself, you know, 2 full packets of pasta on his own, right? You know, so that's 1 kilo he could eat himself. And he's talking about this brahmachari with great reverence, you know, like that. He says, you know, I can eat this much, but there was this brahma. Ooh, wow, he was like, you know. So it's not that the senses are not engaged. This is a mistake. It's that they're engaged according to regulative principles. So, but if we make this point too strong, then it'll be like this. It means this is the sentence. So we are, Krishna consciousness doesn't mean that restricting the senses means that the senses aren't engaged in the sense objects. They are just according to regulative principles. This is what will be heard. Krishna consciousness does not mean that the senses aren't engaged in the sense objects, you know, and then that's it. You know, they can be fully engaged. And then, you know, the part where it says, but according to regular principles, then it's sort of like that. That was the problem that with Mahabharata. Mahabharata is the full Vedic philosophy and culture being presented from a social or emotional perspective. So it will speak to everybody, right? Mahabharata is something everybody can read. Intellectuals are happy, children are happy, the women are happy, you know, people are very, you know, busy with, you know, making money and all, they're happy. Any kind of person is happy hearing Mahabharata. So it's to write a literature that everybody would be happy to listen to, that's very special. But in doing that, then the actual points that he's making become covered so much by the eloquence that's there, the poetry, and also by pointing out how they can properly engage these. That Narad Muni says, all they'll hear is that they can do these things, they won't hear the restrictions. Right? Therefore, because otherwise all they will hear is, oh, I can engage my sense, I don't have to actually control the senses. That would be the understanding. No, control means only apply them according to the rules given in the scripture. Yes?
No, after
oh, okay, yeah. So the difficulty will come is that those go, oh no, but it's okay. Like that. So that's the problem. So therefore, if it's presented like this, right? Okay, it means one must restrict the senses. So then we'll take it as penance, you know, or austerity. You know, it just means they're pulled in and, you know, dried up. But that's for Vanaprastha, right? That's what a Vanaprastha does, like that, consciously. But that's not what a Grihastha does. Grihastha's idea is engage the senses. You want to deal with this sense. Engage it properly, right? Does that make sense? See nice things, smell nice things, but connect them all to Krishna, and here's the rules how to do it. That's the Grihastha. Vanaprastha is, I'm not doing that anymore. Now the fun is doing it the other way. Right? How you say? As one elderly Bengali lady from a very high-grade cultured family said to one of the devotees, she'd come here a long time before, and she stayed for some time, so she would see how the whole community works. And then, you know, they ask, you know, what do you think, you know, and everything like that. And he says, everything's very nice to Krishna consciousness, he said. But she made the comment, but socially you have a serious problem here. And he said, what's that? He says, I mean, it's from her, because she's moving in a certain circle. She said, one of the main problems is your unmarried women act as if they're married, your married women act as if they're not. And so therefore, there's no, how you say, nothing's clear, so there's no social harmony like that. Because no one actually knows what's to be done or not done, how to dress, not dress, everything like that. Does that make sense? Like you see, unmarried girls dress fabulous. The married ones dress like frumps. You know, so like that, but it's supposed to be the other way. Grihastha means now is when you buy all the fancy saris and dress up and everything like that. You know, so that's the whole thing here is that engagement or that understanding is that when you can't engage it, then you're trying to engage it. And when you can engage it, oh no, then I won't engage it. But the point is it's the engagement that removes the attachment. I mean, as we said before, as the Prabhupada was making the point, is by following the Varnashram system, or the Vedic rules, then one's able to come to the platform of Naishkarmya. On that platform of Naishkarmya, then one is able to actually become freed from material entanglement. So that's the whole point. So unless you're following, how do you become freed? If you do nothing, nothing happens if nothing's moving. Right? The car is pointed in the wrong direction. You can't correct that unless the car moves. Right? So it may seemingly be going in the wrong direction, but the point is you're trying to turn it around. So it is turning around, but it may go for a little distance in the wrong direction, but it comes around because your purpose is there. But if it just sits there, then nothing happens. It's not going in the wrong direction, but it's pointed in the wrong direction. But it's not going in the right direction. Does that make sense? So that's very important. Abhideya is the only way things become removed. You get knowledge, that's your sambandha jnana. But the idea is that sambandha jnana will be applied in Abhideya. Right? And we were discussing the Kalyana Gunas. So the knowledge that's there in sambandha, that is also then within Abhideya. Right? The two qualities in Sankarshan, Prajumna, and Adiruddha, those six are all in Abhideya. So Abhideya is actually the complete manifestation of all the qualities. Otherwise, if that's not there, you can't actually address everything. So it's only in action can you address everything else. Does that make sense? Yes?
If a person, a devotee, is in the West, anywhere, and his situation is not good, should we encourage such a person to move to the Dham even if we can see that he can't stick it out for a long time or he's not on that level? But should we encourage such a person?
It depends. It means
if his situation is not good where he's right now.
And that's there. If they're coming for a visit and everything, don't recommend that they sell their house and everything. Because otherwise somebody do that and then they have to go back and there's more trouble and then they get more absorbed. If they can come and spend some time, come at Karti, come at some nice time when devotees are there, they will find the experience very enlivening, very uplifting. That might be. But just to move in the day-to-day, generally the idea is the Dham is taken that it's very special, which is good, but very special then from the angle of religion. And so because religion gives you economic development and facility and respect and nice social interaction, then the Dham must be the nicest. So therefore, I can come to the Dham and I don't have to watch my kids because everything is perfect. They can run around without any supervision and no one will ever make any politics and nothing will ever go wrong and all that. So when something goes wrong, then it's the Dham's fault and all the devotees' fault. So if you're encouraging someone, let them come for a short time when there's a lot going on that will be very devotional, very inspiring, very uplifting, you know, so that they can appreciate actually the spiritual potency of the Dham. Then being here, they can adjust, see if they can adjust with, you know, the social environment, because basically everybody's coming from not a great position, because anything outside the Dham is not a good position. You know, it's just a matter of how good or bad, you know. So then everybody, you know, is coming with their baggage and everything like that. And then so many amazing and interesting things happen, you know, which one doesn't expect. But it's not because of the Dham. It's just because when we come, then we bring our conditioned nature with us, right? But if we can stick it out, we can take advantage of the association, we can not offend devotees, then the benefits are incredibly great. Does that make any sense?
Is it similar, like also we encourage people to join the temple, even though we know that most of them will not stay in the temple, they move, but it's the next step in their
next
development.
Step. It is. It would be good if in moving into the temple, it's understood that whether you're going to continue in the, means, in other words, if they understand in moving into the temple, because it'd be slightly different. Means similar means in principle the same, but a slight detail is different. Is that because you can be a brahmachari or full time devotee in the dham, or you can be a part time in the dham, or like that. So that may not be afforded in the temple. But if they understand that moving into the temple is for one's training and development, and that if you're going to, means you could continue like that, means you can make a lifetime out of that kind of commitment, or you could take advantage and do it for some time until you feel that you have that spiritual like practice and determination, that then one could continue in the community, you know, as a valuable member of the community. But if that's not presented, which many temples don't, because they're trying to keep people in the temple, so they say the community's bad. But then very few can stay in the temple, so when they move out of the temple, then they're bad. And so then because they know they're bad, then someone who's bad doesn't think I can become good. So you have hundreds of devotees who think they're bad and have nothing to do with the temple. You know, all the five devotees in the temple, they don't have anything to do with them. You know, they do their own thing outside. So that is a weakness, is that the temple is a place of education in that. So just like we see is that the Naistika Gurukul is for education, but there are those persons who remain within the system. You know, they just eternally stay that way. So that would be, you know, your brahmacharis. Or they graduate and they themselves open their own school. So in any case, education is their lifestyle. So in the same way, the temple is an educational institution, technically. So, therefore, some can stay in that environment always, and some can just, everybody should go for some time and spend some time and get educated, you know, however they can, either by spending some time or weekends or, you know, moving in and spending time, whatever. But everybody should try to take advantage of what can be gained by the temple. But the temple should be geared that that's actually what it is. Otherwise, if it's just, how you say, people that live in the temple collect to maintain the temple so people can live in the temple, then that kind of arrangement you wouldn't consider the most ideal. Education should be its main thing. You know, in other words, people who are learning about Krishna and practicing that, so people who want to know about that can come and see, okay, someone who practices Krishna, how do they live? What do? They can see that and be inspired and then work that into their life. Is that correct? One should regulate his sense gratification by a balanced program of spiritual and material knowledge. The activities for the maintenance of the body should not be stopped, since the culture of spiritual knowledge necessitates the help of the body and mind. Their maintenance is required. And because you're going to, the spiritual process is body, mind, and words are engaged in the Lord's service. So that means if you don't have one, hard to engage it, right? So if you don't maintain the body, you know, maintain the emotions, maintain the intellect, like, then very hard to engage. Right? But these activities must be performed. Oh, okay. Thank you. But these activities must be performed in connection with the ultimate goal of going back to Godhead. Srila Prabhupada concludes, human activities, diseased by a tendency towards sense gratification, have been regulated in the Vedas under the principles of salvation. Right? So here, sense gratification means that you're engaging the senses is for your satisfaction. Right? The regulation of the senses means that you may be still motivated that you want the benefit of your senses, right? But you're doing it in a way according to authority, So actually there is the element of sacrifice there, even if it's still sakam. Right? You're trying to engage your senses according to higher authority. So it's progressive. That then has the underlying element of naishkarmya. Though your consciousness may still be sakam, you may still be fruitive, but at least you're following, regulating according to the rules. Right? Now, if you continue with that, with the proper understanding and attitude, then that can come to actual naishkarmya, because you're performing the correct activity, but now it's just a matter of bringing the mentality in line with it. Right? Because the main difficulty is if mentality's not there and action's not there, that is what you call a bad situation. Right? But if you're performing the right activity, but the mentality's not there, that's not a bad situation. Right? It's a bad understanding. Like you see many from these families coming from traditional Indian families, their lifestyle is very conducive to Krishna consciousness. Problem is their mentality's not. Right? They're performing the right activity, but with fruitive motives. Or atheistic motives, non-God conscious motives. So what you have to change is the attitude. Then everything is very nice. The lifestyle is already in place. The culture is already in place. So their body, mind, and words will be nice to engage because they know how to engage them. Like that. Okay. So, therefore, when we say sense gratification, so it's regulated, because then when it's regulated, those are called devotional service. Right? When the sense is engaged in the Lord's service, that's called devotional service. When it's not engaged in the Lord's service, it's called sense gratification. Right? Does this make sense? So it's not that the sense isn't engaged, but because we're so attached to engaging the senses, if we break down too much this distinction, the tendency is just engage the senses, and because I chant Hare Krishna, then I think I've already engaged it. Right? Does that make sense? Just like the devotee says, oh, we just chant Hare Krishna, we don't care about the rules. Where did that come from? Prabhupada once said that means in places he'll say that the devotee is above the rules and regulations, means he's above the rules and regulations of the karma kanda, jnana kanda, and that. It's not above the rules of devotional service. But when they say rules, anything that's a rule, you'll throw out. Right? Just like, let's say, Prabhupada goes through the things, the deity worship, or the yajnas, or these, traditional Vedic pancharatric systems of ritual. And he reduces it down to something very simple. Then, because even that simple is more complex than the normal Malecha lifestyle and ritual, then we'll consider that, so many rules. So someone who follows that is fanatic. Well, that's not. It means you have it, let's say like this. Somebody dies, like that. So therefore then, having bathed them, like that, dress them nicely, and then properly burnt, taking your bath in the river. Then after 11 days, you do some kirtan, you talk about, Krishna, you talk about in reverent relationship to the person and Krishna consciousness, you distribute some prasad, Hari Bol, it's done. Okay? That would take maybe a third of a page to describe, even in elaborate detail. Okay? Manu has a full chapter that probably goes on for 50, 60 pages on what to do for a Shraddha ceremony, one Shraddha ceremony. And you're supposed to do that every month on the titi the person disappeared for the first year, and then every year on the titi that they disappeared for the rest of your life until you take sannyas. Now, the question comes is, where are the rules that we're not caring about? So if we apply that to Prabhupada, that's foolish. But personally, I've seen it to be extremely common. Oh, don't be fanatic. We're just trying to do things that Prabhupada said. Oh, that's fanatic. Maybe a fanatic mentality, but there's still not discerning between action and mentality. And because of this, it has a detrimental effect. this Bengali saying is that you take a knife and you'll sharpen it on the tree, right? And when it's sharp, to test if it's sharp, then you cut the tree, right? So before Krishna consciousness, how many people actually even knew about things like an Achman or an Artik or these different things, you know, like that, using water in the toilet, you know, stuff like that? Who knew? Very few. And so having learned that from Prabhupada, having sharpened our intelligence and everything, then once we get that intelligence, then we use that on Prabhupada to cut, you know, what he said. That's the meaning of this Bengali phrase. Does that make sense? So you have to be very, very careful is here, is to be able to clearly define, right? Because that's sambandhi jnana, is being able to clearly define everything and know exactly their relationship. Right? So the senses are engaged, but according to the directions given by Krishna. Right? Then it works. That's not understood, then it's a problem. So then, better than just unrestricted sense gratification, better than that is restraining the senses, not according to Shastra, but just not using them and not getting yourself into trouble. So then in that way, then devotees are basically better situated. But because of that, then there develops so many social difficulties that they are unable to understand that these could be taken care of by simple social interactions. Does that make sense? Like that. Like now, you have a fancy sari, you have some fancy this and that, so some people will only dress up on those things if, you know, they're flying to Bombay or they're going to the forum in Calcutta. You know, but if somebody, you know, has a program at their house or some scar, everybody shows up in, you know, even worse clothes than they wear on a normal day. But that some scars are there, that's the time to dress up and look fancy and get out all the stuff. Eat nice things, interact with each other. That's the time. But it doesn't happen. Oh, well, that's Maya. But how is it that, you know, dressing up for, you know, going shopping is not? That's somehow or another like pure, unalloyed Krishna consciousness. It doesn't make sense. You understand? So that's the whole idea, is that these things are there so that one is able to engage the senses, engage all those needs and desires, but in a regulated way. We're not interested. Why? Because it's regulated. If it's unregulated, then we're doing it. Well, because we're working on Western regulation. Okay, when you're at this place or that place, as long as you're not in America, then you look nice when you're in the airport. Right? In America, you should look like a slob. But, you know, in any other part of the world, generally they dress a little better. Does that make sense? So we'll do that. Oh, everyone's dressing like that. But in here, it's like, you know, everyone's, oh, that's fanatic. You know what I'm saying? So why is it not fanatic, the Western thing? Does that make sense? Was this too subtle? Right? So, in other words, this element of the human activity diseased by a tendency towards sense gratification is corrected by engaging the same senses, but according to regulation. Right? Does that make sense? Because as soon as there's regulation, immediately the excitement about the thing is lost. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. So, that's the idea. But it's not whimsical. It's also according to, you know, whatever's the authority. So then one establishes that. So then that excitement is lost, because it's the excitement that clouds the vision. Right? Like that. Because even that overcomes the attachments. One may have more important attachments, but they are, you know, regular daily attachments. But some excitement will overcome that. You know, kids, they play, like Mother Yashoda, right? Krishna's out playing with his friends, and she calls him for lunch, and he doesn't come because they're excited about the play, so they're playing there. But he's hungry, but he doesn't notice. Like that. So then she has to come out and say, you know what, you're a street boy or something like that, you know, so you live out here. So says, now get inside and, you know, take your bath and eat lunch. So the excitement will overwhelm. Or if one focuses too much on the attachment, that will overwhelm. So then the activity doesn't become right. So either way, doesn't. So regulation means that the excitement and the attachment are controlled. So therefore, the activity will be done in a controlled way that will give you the best result. Right? But because it wasn't spontaneous, then somehow, you know, this is how you say, bideshi rag. The modern rag marg, you know, like that. Because generally what that is it's generally the modern rag marg versus, you know, the Vedic Vaidhi, like that. That's generally always a longer, you know, just like in the Vedic, the rags against the Vaidhis are always fighting. So there's a problem here. But if they could switch the rag from the modern to the Vedic, then we'd be doing okay. But generally, it's not always like that. Does this make sense? Yeah.
A materialistically minded person will not get excited if there is rules and regulations.
Yes. That's
because
the whole.
It kills the excitement.
Yes. So that's the point. Is that that's it's, so? What's killed is the excitement, not the activity. So that's why then it's said that one must perform one's duties. Because when. Generally is that we'll do something because we're excited to do it, or we need to do it, one or the other. Something is there to inspire. So then we will act. So if we remove that, we won't act. So the difficulty comes with the Vedic is not like that, because if you don't act, there is no purification. It means you have an attachment to sense gratification, but that's not good. So therefore, I won't do anything. But you don't purify your senses. You don't purify the heart. So the Vedic is that you may not be excited, but you still do the same activity. Right? But now, according to the rules and regulations, and now to please Krishna. Then from doing that, actually, you will then notice the actual underlying experiences that have some depth to them. The excitement may not be noticed, but what's underneath it will be noticed. You know, it's just like, let's say, due to excitement, the child notices the aspects of the party. What they don't notice is that their parents went to a lot of trouble to arrange that. Like that. So if you work on according to regulation, you'll start noticing these deeper things that are actually relationship. But that's why then Krishna says you have to do your duty. Because the tendency is if I'm not excited about or attached to it, I won't do it. That's the path of jnana. Right? And what I mean, gyan is I don't want it, so that I have knowledge, it's not worth it, I won't act. Or in karma, I will only act if I'm getting the benefit. So that's why Buddha yoga is unique to any other system, because despite you not having an interest in it, you still act because it's your duty. Does that make sense? Like that. We'll come in just 1 second. You got something on that? Same thing? Or?
Same thing. when the excitement's removed, then what has to motivate you, isn't it the higher taste?
The higher taste, but even the higher taste is there once it gets to taste. But in the beginning, the first thing is intelligence, so it's rules. Because I'm supposed to do this. That's why, see, it means once it gets to taste, then you'll spontaneously do it. That's spontaneous devotional service. But until the taste comes, you'll be performing the same activity because you're supposed to. That's the Vaidhi. So it's very important is that I'm supposed to do this. So, but to do that, you must have the knowledge to do that. Because the others, you're spontaneous. You're going to do something. Right or wrong, you're going to do something. But if you're not inspired, you're only going to do it because you have the proper knowledge how to do it. Otherwise, why would you do it? Does that make sense? Yeah. Like that? Yeah. He's getting it here. Yeah.
It's very interesting to see how a child is naturally excited. In a mature way, the father or the mother sees the child acting in ignorance, and most of the time have to be protected, that is spontaneity. So in this spiritual path, we have rules and regulations as well in any material path, whether professional or academic, there are so many rules and regulations in modern life. The difference is that in the spiritual path, we accept it voluntarily, or we can
reject. Yeah.
But in the other, we have forcibly have to accept it.
That's true. The modern, you're forced to, because it's just the mode. So all the Vedic is voluntary. It means it was just like this, to be an example. One devotee astrologer made this point. He says, many times people come, and then you read on the chart, and then there's going to be a loss in money, right? And so then they work at how to not lose that money. What can I do? What ritual? What stone? What mantra? You know, like this and that. He's made the point is, it's not that you can change it. This is the situation you're going to be in. You know, it's just like you're on the train from Delhi to Howrah. And so you're going to end up at Howrah on that train. But they're thinking, how can I, what mantra or jom can I wear so this train won't end up in Howrah? It'll end up in Madras. It won't happen. You know, you have to change activity, right? So he said, "Is you're going to lose the money. So now you're going to lose the money, you don't have it. You're going to lament about it. You got no benefit from it. So the point is, since you know you're going to lose the money, give it away in charity. Find something worthwhile to give it to. Then you've given it away. You've lost it, technically, because whether you give it away or it's taken away, you don't have it. So astrologically, it's the same thing. Right? So you don't have it, so you've given it away. Then you've got so much benefit by supporting, you know, the preaching mission and other things like that. That's intelligent. So the point is that in the modern, you're forced to act. The Vedic, you're going to have to act in that way, but you have the volunteer, you can volunteer to act according to the Lord's directions in that. In other words, by the modes of nature, you have to eat. So now you can either just eat what you want or follow the rules and eat how Krishna says. Right? Or you by the modes, you're going to have a family, or you can follow Krishna's rules on how to interact with that family. Yes?
All right. In yesterday's Bhagavatam verse, it was very peculiar because the verse spoke how Swamigamam was enjoying the material facilities in the spiritual mood, let's say. It was very clear, it was like that. Because so, in the formula that you are talking, that you always refer to, it can be said that the formula one element, never forget Krishna, is applied in this case, and we have to follow the other two formulas, two elements. Always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna, because the moment that we forget, just
yeah. See, these are fine points. And remember, this is third canto. Mentioning here, third. You could all hear that. Yeah. What he was saying? No. Okay. He was saying that in the Bhagavatam, that point was being made that Swayambhuvamana was enjoying the material facilities from the spiritual platform. So third canto is, in other words, we're starting with basically where we're at. Second canto is the beginning of the discussion. First canto is we are opening, how you say, is introducing what is the Bhagavatam and what's going on. What will be gained by this Bhagavatam? What is there? Why it's spoken? What's the benefit? So second canto, we see the actual discussion starts. So in there, having explained the workings of the mechanical, or the metaphysical workings of the universe, then one can understand is that the Lord's involved anyway, but it's inferior here because of the dead aspect of dead matter. But everything is happening anyway by the Lord's grace. So then, if you engage all these things properly, then you are actually happy. In other words, our principle is that you water the root of the tree, the leaves are happy. So if Krishna is pleased, he is pleased. So in here, another way of saying this is that Swayambhuvamana and his wife pleased the Lord by their activities. You know what I'm saying? When you go later in the cantos, that's what you'll hear. Right? But because we're starting off, because it's the beginning, then this is where you're starting. So we've already, Kardama, Devahuti, all these things. So people are grihasthas, they have their needs. They want to know that they can engage those in Krishna's service and still be happy. Otherwise, then we take up the impersonal concept that, okay, spiritual means opposite of material, that means I can't be happy. You know what I'm saying? The girl dresses up fancy to get herself a man, that's just being pragmatic. But when she's got a man, then, you know, shouldn't be too involved, this Maya and all this stuff, so therefore then she doesn't bother dressing or looking nice or behaving nice, like this kind of thing. Because anything nicer in that would be Maya. You know, if the husband and wife actually sat down and, following the scriptures on being sensitive to each other's needs, had a pleasant conversation where they actually enjoyed it, that would be Maya. Right? But the point that's being brought out here is that why is Swayambhuva enjoying? Because whatever it is, everything is being done for Krishna and the line of Krishna's rules. You know what I'm saying? Just like, let's say, we have a drama, and it's about Krishna and everything like that. So the devotees didn't enjoy the drama, right? But what were the facilities, right? It was a nice arrangement, nice sitting arrangement, like that. The lighting was good, the sound was good, the acting was good. Anything there was spiritual, technically. It's all still material energy, right? Gross and subtle. So proper combination of gross and subtle energy, material energy, being used in connection with the Lord is pleased. Because he's pleased, the devotees are pleased. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? It means that you know, you bought that Italian pasta, you boiled it, now you offer it to Krishna. So it is spiritualized. But it's not going to have this same taste. You know, is it now going to taste like, rice? Because now it's been offered to Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? You know, so it's spaghetti now, after you offer it, it's still going to be spaghetti. So the point is the sense enjoyment will be the same. But now, because it's connected to Krishna, then you enjoy it from the spiritual platform. But we don't have spiritual senses to engage. We have material senses. So that's why we use the term spiritual eyes. It's material sense that's been connected to Krishna, so it's spiritualized. Therefore, it says the devotee enjoys with spiritual senses. Because otherwise we think, okay, if I take this up, there's no enjoyment. So why I should take it up? Right? So they have to convince you that even you have material desires, you're still going to be happy being Krishna conscious. Right? So third canto is like that. As you go, then you get to Prahlad Maharaj. He's not so worried about the facilities. Very rare it talks about the facilities. It doesn't say now, having, you know, been installed on the throne by Nrisimhadeva, now he enjoyed the facilities of his father's kingdom with spiritual sense. It doesn't say that there. All you hear about is his interaction with the Lord. Because by that time, the devotee has come to that level of realization. The third canto, we're dealing with what you are right now. How to engage that in Krishna's service. Right? Does that make sense? So therefore that's brought out because that is the fact. But devotees miss that point because if the senses engage, it's Maya. But what else do you have? That's like saying, well, I have these rupees. They're made out of, you know, pieces of paper and they're funny colors and they got this weirdo guy's face on it. And so therefore it's Maya to use it. We don't have any problem with that, right? Why? Because basically we're coming from the bourgeois culture. Right? And so money is important in the bourgeois culture. So we'll finesse anything about money. Krishna conscious, not Krishna consciousness. As long as money is happening, then everything's fine. So money somehow or another, we don't mind engaging. But the senses, we can't. Does that make sense? So this is a difficulty, and it's stemming from the impersonal concept of philosophy. So that's why it's being. That's why, therefore, is the element. If you have to combine the two, is perform your duties with knowledge, because generally someone will perform his duties in ignorance, and if he has knowledge, he won't do them. Right? Because if he doesn't have knowledge, then he has material inspiration. So he'll do the activity because of the fruit or result. If he has knowledge, then he understands that's not very good. So therefore, he will give up that activity. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. Okay, so we'll end here. We'll continue on Thursday. Because we start at the same spot. So we'll say.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.